Welcome to Career Practitioner Conversations. This podcast is presented by the National Career Development Association. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening. I'm Melissa Venable, NCDA Director of Professional Development, and I'm excited to introduce this episode, the third in a series inspired by NCDA's pilot mentoring program. We have a panel conversation for you today, led by Carol Taylor. Carol has been involved in NCDA's mentoring program since its inception and participated in a related conference presentation at last year's conference. Among her many other qualifications for this role is her work with mentorships in sub-agencies of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you, Carol, for agreeing to moderate today. I'll turn it over to you now to introduce the members of your panel.
Thanks, Melissa. Well, I want to start out by sharing that January is National Mentoring Month. So the National Career Development Association's mentoring program is a pilot program approved by the board for the 2022-23 fiscal year. Member participation will support the connections that are valuable to early professionals and experienced professionals alike. I want to thank immediate past president, Dr. Sharon Givens, for envisioning and implementing this program during her tenure as president of NCDA. And I also want to give a hearty thanks to today's panel. The members include Dr. Christian Chan, Dr. Melissa, also known as Missy Wheeler, Dr. Young-Young Liu, and Ashley Osborne, soon to be doctor in 2023. I would like you to please go around and just say a few words about yourself, give a little background, a short background, so that the participants can know a little bit about you.
Hi, everyone. It is so good to hear from you all, to see you all. I am Christian Chan. My pronouns are he, him, his. I'm an assistant professor at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Particularly two areas that are really central to my work are intersectionality. And the second relates to the overlapping effects of oppression and trauma. In particularly on career development and counseling pathways. So with that being said, I am somebody who firmly believes that career development is very much a part of our lives and very much is impacted by many of the social forces of oppression that we see in our world.
Hi, I'm Missy Wheeler, and I am a clinical assistant professor at Sacred Heart University. I am excited to be part of this conversation, one, because I consider Carol Taylor to be one of my great mentors in my professional development, so it's an honor to be invited. I also really believe in the power of mentoring as it helps us build our professional identity and grow our professional identity and really sustain in our fields of choice, but also recognizing when maybe we need to move on from where we are and grow in a different way. So mentoring has been something I've been interested in. I've started a peer mentoring program within our university. And so this is a great way to continue the conversation and hopefully get everyone else excited about mentoring too.
Hi, everyone. My name is Young-Young Liu, and I'm assistant professor at California State University Fresno. I am a national certified counselor and a certified career counselor with a passion in supporting career development and wellness of underserved populations in higher education. I'm an active member of various professional organizations, especially NCDA. I served as the co-lead for the research team of the International Student Services Committee and have been presenting at NCDA conferences every year since I became a member. And now I'm really happy to be a mentee of the mentoring program.
Hi, my name is Ashley Osborne. I am a doctoral candidate in counselor education and supervision at the University of Nevada, Reno. I also work as a tenure track counselor at Truckee Meadows Community College, also in the Reno area. My research interests are at the intersection of clinical and career counseling, and my dissertation focuses on entrapment in higher education. So what factors are really impacting students' ability to change majors with that early career trajectory in mind. Currently, I serve as the chair of the Graduate Student Committee for NCDA. And yeah, that's me.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit about mentoring, and then I want us to debunk a few of those myths. So mentoring is a developmental approach that connects mentees who want to learn from mentors with experience, knowledge, and skills. Despite its many advantages, mentoring is still not a must-have developmental tool across organizations because there are many misconceptions about it. Lots of research on mentoring has helped dispute some myths. For example, we understand that mentoring is as beneficial for the mentor as it is for the mentee, and that mentoring can be conducted both in person and virtually. Nonetheless, there are still many common misconceptions that hold organizations back from implementing mentoring programs, and as a result, hold people back from participating in them. Today, we are going to chat about some of those myths and the truth that busts them. So the first myth we want to address is the mentor must be older or more senior than the mentee. The mentor must be older or more senior than the mentee. So does anyone have something very compelling to add right away?
I can start us off. This myth for me is kind of one of the big myths that I encounter even professionally, that this has to be kind of this top-down model of mentoring. I am this, you know, older, more sage kind of person who's then going to tell you how to do things. And I've benefited from mentoring provided by folks who know more than me, who are younger than me. I am of that generation that is the technology adopters. I was not born with smartphones, and I have needed mentoring related to technology, generational differences in workplace attitudes, and even approaches to school, learning about that choice to come to college. And so I don't believe that it has to be someone older. It really has to do with that the value of knowledge and what I need to gain from mentoring, or what I'm looking to gain from mentoring. And really it's that support piece, that supportive person who can help guide us to that next place that we're going. And that doesn't have to be someone who's older than us.
Sure, I definitely agree. And also, from my experience working with Christian, thinking about what we talk about in our mentoring meetings, you could say, some of it is also sharing personal experiences. For example, how we navigated academia, right? How everything is going at work. How do we maintain our well-being? So really what we're doing is sharing our personal experiences. So there's no more senior personal experience or older personal experience. Our experiences matter, and they're both very valuable. And sometimes I'm also very appreciative when I shared my struggles. Christian would also share his experience, maybe with a similar struggle and how he navigated that. Right? It doesn't have to be he has every answer to whatever struggle that I have, which really helped me normalize my experience. And it's okay not to have everything figured out. And we're using that mentoring meeting to discuss and try to figure things out together.
I really love Yongyong's point on there's no real senior when it comes to personal experience. So being able to share from your perspective, regardless of age, I think it's really powerful because you are getting these different perspectives that maybe from my own viewpoint, I wouldn't be able to come to. Very similar to people collaborating in a business meeting or something along those lines. You know, two heads are better than one.
There are a lot of different perspectives that sit with me when I think about what this myth and how it's been endorsed, not only in our profession, but also across what we think about the workforce, right? So one of the main pieces that I see as a concern that I have when I hear this myth is it really assumes that the mentor and the mentee will have the same exact journey. And we know that that's not going to be true.
Right.
They are not going to have the same exact journey. And then you're also thinking the way how you respond, the way how you propose a solution for a mentee is ultimately going to be successful for them. And we don't know that yet until we know their journey. The other piece that I also sit with, right, is one of the main challenges is we also, sometimes if we think in this myth and what it is essentially conveying to all of us about mentorship, it's also a way to say that only one person here, right, has assets and skills to contribute. And that is actually another myth in itself, where in reality, our mentees already arrive with so many assets and skills that maybe mentoring isn't just about, you know, what kind of skills I can acquire from a mentor. It is about honoring those skills, those assets, strengths that the mentee already has, the mentee already brings to the workforce, the mentee already brings to the industry. So I think in this vein, I mean, this is very much a matter of honoring, supporting, championing, right, what the mentee already brings into the, not only into the relationship, but also into all of the different contexts of how they want to contribute, not only at work, but also in all their different identities. The third piece that I'm also sitting with, right, is we also assume, you know, based on what I was talking about, saying that you have the same exact journey as a mentor mentee, that's a huge concern to me because we don't live in the same institutional, organizational, and social context, right? So even if I thought about one of my mentees, and even if we shared some social identities across race, ethnicity, gender identity, social class experience, disability, sexual identity, affectional identity, that it doesn't mean that we're going to have the same experiences, right? Based on some of the organizational, institutional, social context that our mentees are walking through, they are going to have different experiences. And what might be more helpful to them, right, is to say, okay, I can detect or anticipate, here's what the system might be doing to you. Here's what the context, the social institutional context might be doing. And that's how it might deter, how it might enhance, how it might impact the way how you're seeing your own career development, right? And so we can't ignore that these social identities have such a instrumental impact in the way that we show up in our mentoring relationships or in the workforce.
Thank you, everyone. Does anyone have anything else you'd like to add?
One thing that I've really seen in our relationship, Missy is my mentor, and something that Christian just touched on as well, is that top-down model where my experiences are not necessarily going to inform my mentee's experiences. And Missy has been phenomenal with taking that approach of, do you want me to help you brainstorm? Like, what role do you want me to play in this scenario? Do you want me to listen? Do you want me to ask you the kind of a counseling perspective? Or do you want me to be this active participant in trying to figure out your next steps?
We must be sharing a brain, because I was going to talk about in our relationship, it's been that I try to be really intentional around knowing that we have different experiences. We're in different parts of the country. And so what I see and what I know can be really different than what you're seeing and what you're doing. And it is. And so I invite and ask intentionally, is it okay if I share a story? May I share my experience? It may relate, it may not. And then we process whether or not it fits or it doesn't fit. And if it doesn't fit, how does it not fit? What's the light? What's not? So that intentional piece to mentoring too, because as everyone shared, we don't have the same identities. We are not on the same journey yet. I would say that Ashley has taught me a great deal too about higher ed entrapment, a phrase I did not know before we met.
I hadn't heard that phrase either, and I love it. Okay. So the next myth that we want to debunk is that the mentor dictates the relationship. And I know we've started on the debunking process with that one. Do we have any more to add about the mentor dictates? And I guess the word that we want to debunk is dictate.
I can share. Just from my experience, I would say it's quite the opposite, actually. In my mentoring meetings with Christian, my mentor, Christian has done a great job in creating an open, supportive, and collaborative space for our meetings, where as the mentee, I'm actually the one coming in with the most salient topics or questions that I want to discuss. So in some ways, you could say I am guiding our meetings, right, as the mentee. And I really appreciate this mentee-centered approach, because now I know that Christian really cares about what I have to say, and he really wants me to make the most out of our time together, and he's ready to meet me where I am.
I'll echo that. So we also have a very collaborative relationship in terms of how we deal with things. We might have something that we're planning to talk about, but if something has come up in my life or in Missy's life that we feel like this takes precedence, I really appreciate the flexibility to move to that topic and really refocus our plan for the day. I do appreciate structure in my daily life, but I think more so than having that structure is the flexibility to move when needed.
I was thinking so much about this myth, right? And one of the it's a myth that actually, I mean, can is commonly, I would say, espoused, endorsed, right? That we often see, right? That in terms of a mentor, like you sort of look to them for resources, supports, and then sometimes unknowingly, unconsciously, even implicitly, we might be seeing that sometimes you see the mentor driving a lot of what the agenda looks like or creating the agenda. And it's not to say that, you know, the mentor like has to be, you know, that they're relinquishing the work that they need to do, right, in mentorship. But what we're also seeing is that sometimes if this is not a goal that's going to be helpful or something that is on the mind of the mentee, then the problem is our mentees are going to be so disenchanted from the experience. And so it's not going to be meaningful for them. It's not going to be something that they feel passionate about. So it may not be helpful, right? And I think, you know, based on where we're at in the conversation, I also reflect on this myth, right? In terms of sometimes what it's easy to drive into a mentoring agenda is by thinking that mentorship only means that we're only going to talk about work, work environment, skills, right? But really, when we think about who we show up as, how we come to work, how we think about vocation, this is so much a part, and how we think about our career, right? And mentorship, that is so much, we bring all of our full selves to this entire process, right? So if we can't honor that, then that's a real concern for me. Because at the end of the day, what we're often sitting with is, I need to make sure that I'm honoring my relationships, right? I'm honoring my personal relationships. I'm honoring my wellness. I'm honoring what I do outside of work, because that is every part of who I am, even when I show up at work.
As you were talking, Christian, I just kept thinking about that phrase we use often in counseling and coaching, meeting our client where they are. And if I, as a mentor, don't meet you where you are, and I try to pull you where I am, then what value are you going to get out of this? But then also you're going to become disenchanted. You're going to shut down. And so it's that piece of let's start the conversation there. What's relevant? What's salient to you? And yes, this has goals. We do have goals, but it's also, you are important. Your whole self is important. And you bring your whole self into this relationship, into your career, into your, it is your identity. So let's talk about that and let's bring that in the room. And that concept of power that I know has been spoken about in previous podcasts, that power of the mentor to dictate the relationship, and that really sets that a kind of imbalance, and can create a barrier to real dialogue. And so I'm hoping that in our mentoring conversations, we can have that I'm meeting you where you are and you're meeting me where I am, and we're working together to honor each other in the space where we are.
This Nice. Is what I would consider to be one of my first professional mentoring experiences. I've actually facilitated a mentorship program that was in conjunction with a scholarship program. Christian had talked about mentee passion, and I think this being a voluntary experience, something that I wanted to sign up for, that I wanted to take part in, has been a major component of its success. The program I facilitated before, they were required to meet with a mentor in order to get scholarship dollars towards college. So in that case, I needed to dictate the relationship in some capacity, because otherwise they would sit there on the phone silent because they didn't really want to meet with me. They were just there out of necessity. So I think when it is freedom to choose to be in this program and really wanting to be here and learn as much as I can, that's where it becomes more of that bi-directional relationship that Dr. Niles was talking about on the previous podcast.
Ashley has a really good point here, because when we think about this myth, right, it's not necessarily like that. One of the key pieces, right, is that I can help to guide, but I'm not dictating the relationship. I'm not dictating the agenda here, right? So maybe it's almost like, you know, when we think about good mentorship too, even anticipating what questions might be helpful, right? And so that might be helpful, because sometimes even when we think like mentees, right, there could be a lot of trepidation. There could be a lot of fear. It depends on like how much also mentoring experience they've had, both as a mentor and a mentee. And they might not know what questions to ask, and that is okay. So maybe the approach that for everybody who's listening to us today, maybe the hope is that you're asking curiously, you're introducing curiosity into the mentoring relationship, and you can still guide, but you can be curious about what is going to be helpful, impactful for the mentee.
Thank you for your fabulous responses, everyone. Thank you, thank you, thank you. The third myth is mentoring matches need to be perfect. So mentoring matches need to be perfect. What would you have to say in response to that?
Missy and I had discussed this last week, and we're like, what is perfection anyway? Like, there is no such thing. It doesn't exist. So when we're talking about it, like, how do we interact with people in our daily lives? And do I have to be a perfect match with every person that I want to collaborate with or work with? And that would be impossible and I would get nowhere. So we talked about perfection. Is it unattainable? Like, why would we bother pursuing? It's almost more powerful. It's definitely more powerful to learn from people who have those different experiences.
I think we even said, oh my goodness, what is perfect? What would this look like if it were perfect? I don't even know how to define a perfect mentoring relationship. I can, thinking about so my colleague and I started a peer mentoring program with the counseling students in our master's program. And I am in awe of what NCDA did when they matched us, because it's turned out, it's worked out really well, and it's a huge task. I've done it. It's a huge task. And there's little nuances of, okay, well, how do you match? What makes a successful match? And I've been really pondering that question. It's not going to be perfect, because we can't really define perfect. And then what does make a successful match, and thinking on that, and as a way to debunk this myth, what makes a successful match, and that curiosity piece that was mentioned, the getting to know you, meeting you where you are, focusing on your goals, honoring your identity, honoring your experience. But I think a big piece of this too is that modeling piece. When we think about professional identity development or even career development, that model how to have those conversations, model how to broach differences, that modeling of how to have difficult conversations and to really dive in to some of these topics. And for me, that piece of mentoring that makes it, oh man, it's going to get really kooky here. It makes it magical. Those pieces that make it magical are that when you can have model conversations for each other, even about being vulnerable, being intentional.
I definitely agree with what Missy has just shared. I think I also took a note on curiosity. I think that's definitely key for start building this relationship. For me, mentoring is really relationship building. I think as long as both mentors and mentees are really invested in this relationship and they're willing to be curious and they're generally caring about each other and open to hearing what the other person has to say or receiving feedback from each other, willing to make adjustments if needed, I think that's the most important thing. When I first saw this question, I was thinking, Are we thinking about perfect mentoring matches being maybe having very similar paths so that they have like very similar or exact knowledge or maybe skills that the mentor could pass down to the mentee? But then when I think about it, then we're missing multiple new perspectives or new possibilities, right? So when it comes down to it, I think the relationship piece is definitely the most important, no matter which path, which identity, or what life experiences both mentors and mentees have.
When we listen to this myth, I also get the sense that we foreclose the possibility of informal mentoring relationships, right? I often think about when we quote or create this quote unquote perfect match of a mentoring relationship, it often speaks to formal mentoring relationships, but really we know that some of the most successful mentoring relationships have also been informal. Sometimes they're also peer mentoring relationships. I mean, there are a multitude of different mentorship relationships that you might have throughout your entire career, your entire lifetime. And in many ways, like Yang was saying, one of the key pieces, right, is that mentoring is very much about the relationship. If that relationship does not work, I mean, how do you think you're going to get tasks done, right? Or whatever tasks you want to get done. If it's not sustaining you, then it's not going to be helpful. You're not going to come to this mentoring meeting, right, like feeling excited about the work. Sometimes you might start dreading it because that relationship is not good. It doesn't mean that your interests, your skills, even your pathways need to line up that closely. Sometimes it's about some of the experiences that you might feel like, I just need some support around this. And there are times, right, when I've worked with mentees and all we did, right, was we just vented. And that was like, that was it. And I was like, that's okay. Just vent. I was like, if you need a yell while we're in this like Zoom meeting and that's all you need to do, that is totally okay. I will fully support you. If what you need, if right, like, or you need to cuss someone out, like that is okay too. Just don't do it in that professional setting. But you can do that with me here, right? Because maybe that's what you need right now. It's like, I need that because I'm carrying all this like emotion with me and I don't want this to seep into my work or impact my work. And sometimes that's what someone might need in the moment. The other piece here too, with the, what we call a quote unquote, like perfect mentoring match is, I think just like where we're at in the discussion, but I think about what Yang was saying was sometimes it also forecloses the idea of having disagreements, right? It is okay in our mentoring relationships to not see eye to eye. It's okay to have disagreements because I think that enriches the perspectives that we can carry, that we can implement within our own lives. And I like, we can also say that for mentors too, right? It's like, well, I screwed that up. So I need to pivot and do something differently here. So it's one of those times when we have to really, I mean, we have to honor what that means. And it also creates a lot of humility. It also creates a lot of different ways that we really become reflective in our work, not only as a mentee, but also as a mentor, because we need to sort of pivot and be humble and really embrace how do we be authentic in this relationship. And the final piece I'll share is that when we think about mentorship, right? I mean, mentorship, when we think about especially formal mentoring relationships that are often attached to mentor matches, mentor-mentee matches, one of the pieces that we don't always acknowledge is that mentorship is a journey. It is a journey. And it is very much a journey because it isn't only contained within, right? Or at least I know many of the most successful mentoring relationships that we all have, right, may not necessarily be contained within a specific length of time or within the program itself.
Christian, something that you said when you were talking about the mentor meeting, and it not always, you know, it's not always perfect. And we have these moments of, I know when I was asked to be a mentor, I was like, wait, who, me? Do you know me? Does anyone, really? Me? And I can't do this. Just that internal dialogue of, I can't do this. What do I have to offer someone else? And so for folks who maybe perhaps are one day going to be asked to be mentors, that piece is really a great thing to kind of highlight that you're not going to be perfect. It's not going to always go exactly how you plan. And reflecting on that, and what about it did you think didn't go well? What are you going to do differently? You can move forward. You can learn from this. I think as a mentor, this process and being a mentor has really taught me a lot about myself and helped me kind of refine some of those things. Notice some things that I do that I don't want to necessarily do all the time. Maybe notice where I'm not meeting someone where they are and how the next meeting is going to be different. And being intentional about the conversation and what happened and what I'm going to do differently. So back to that modeling piece. So I think for those folks who are thinking about being mentors but not sure, it is a process and it's a journey. And where there isn't a perfect mentoring meeting either.
Okay, so the last question is, or the last myth, mentoring is time consuming. Mentoring is time consuming.
The great thing about this relationship is that it is a relationship and we can have conversations around our boundaries and the boundary of time that we have for this, or either our boundaries as far as communication, whatever that boundary is. And so when I think about this myth, I think too about the intentionally setting that commitment, because it is a commitment. This is a commitment to someone else. It is a professional commitment, but it is also a relationship commitment. And when I make that commitment, I want to be really transparent about, for me, what that commitment is, but what also you expect in that commitment, because those two things may not initially align. So that's where we can have the negotiation around time, what you need, what I need, and have that piece of negotiation as far as boundaries, as far as time commitment. I will also share, though, that I really look forward to meeting Ashley and meeting with Ashley. And sometimes I want to have a meeting before our next meeting. I want to have a meeting before the meeting just so that we can talk about things we didn't talk about in our last meeting. And then the hour is up. And I think, where did that hour go? Can we spend an extra 15 minutes? Because this has been so great. So know too that you may set that and then become involved in the process and become invested in the process. Because really, we become invested in each other. And it's not a huge time commitment. It's also something that we negotiate together and navigate together.
You know, we only were required to meet twice in October, twice in November, and once a month, I think through October. That's not a lot of time. Of course, we spend time away from each other, thinking about each other and thinking what can be the next best thing, or how can this be done more effectively, or how can that be useful. I think that our time it's not that much time. Thinking about how we want to use the time is part of our development. It's part of our growth as mentors. We grow into this as well. And thinking about what can be the best thing and the best way to move forward, I think is very, very, very important. And I also want to throw in here that I consider Christian a mentor of mine. He preceded me in the Maryland Counseling Association as president, and I learned a lot from Christian Chan. One of the things I didn't necessarily practice as well as he did was patience. I'm still working on that, Christian. But, you know, as we said before, nothing's perfect.
We can also re-envision mentorship as more than just what we might consider formal mentorship, right? Or even that whole idea of what formal mentorship looks like. I think often we think, okay, formal mentorship needs to look like I need to set up a meeting and do this and that. And what is ultimately going to be most helpful? I mean, I've remember being a formal mentor in a different program outside of NCDA. I saw my mentee only once, but in between seeing them only once, we were texting the whole time. We were emailing the whole time. They were asking me for resources on something related to their dissertation. So some different capacities, right? Where we could interact in different ways. And sometimes, I mean, speaking of dissertations, I was also that person who was saying, okay, even though we can't meet, because I know you're really busy writing your dissertation, I was the person who was texting every 2 weeks, how's it going on your dissertation? And then I had to, you know, write in a funny joke sometimes, right? I was like, how's it going your dissertation? I know that you don't like hearing from me about this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I know you got to finish. And I know I'm going to, part of my role here as the mentor, right, is to hold you accountable. And so that, and that's also the goal that we had established. And then it also happened, right, that I was really navigating mentoring relationships with another mentee who was very much engaged in, they were on the job market, right, trying to find different faculty positions. And I was saying, okay, they were sending me like, what do you think of this place? I was like, okay, yeah, let's talk about that. And so it could look different, right? Or sometimes I'm just celebrating with them, right? All the different wins that they had. And that's sometimes what matters. That in itself could be a part of the mentoring relationship and the mentoring interaction. So when we think about time consuming, right? I think it's because we also think that mentoring needs to look this one way of, I need to have a formal meeting. It needs to either happen in person or on Zoom. When I'm like, what if we change to connecting on text, social media, LinkedIn, all these different routes that we could still engage in a meaningful mentoring relationship?
And isn't that the point? Social media is about establishing relationships and networking if we use it in a way that works well in that area. So using it effectively for networking and staying in good relationships is, I think, important. I think it's important professionally as well as personally. So for the very ending, I would like to say that these misconceptions often lead organizations and individuals to develop a distorted view of how mentoring should be. And what I'm talking about here are the myths that we addressed during this conversation. In truth, mentoring is flexible enough to accommodate a variety of needs as long as the foundation of the relationship is solid. And with that, I would like to say thank you to everyone for participating. Thank you for your insight. Thank you if you're listening. Thank you for listening. I've enjoyed working with this group. I've enjoyed participating in this podcast, and maybe again in the future. Who knows? And thanks to Melissa.
Thank you all for being here. Another great conversation about mentoring, and thrilled to have two pairs of mentors and mentees from the program, as well as Carol to walk us through this. So thank you all for being here.